Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host, your grateful host, really, and I'll tell you why grateful in just a moment. Great show for you today. Second hour, Deacon Harold Burke-Sivers will be here, and the modern world is a bit of an assault on our peace, and even we in Catholic media sometimes can be guilty of undermining people's peace, and he's going to talk about how to remain in the peace of Jesus, and he's the guy to ask about it. Your calls welcome. We'll have a wonderful conversation with Deacon Harold the second hour about remaining in the peace of Jesus. This hour, we're going to talk about human dignity with someone who spends her life defending, upholding, and providing for human dignity. And if you'd like to get in on that conversation, you're always welcome, 888-318-7884. But now I've teased our guest, and I'm going to take a break. I'm going to take a minute before I introduce her, because I have to say thank you to all the people who supported us over the last 3 days. It's extremely gratifying, the fact that so many people will pick up the phone and call and make their pledge. And keep us going on the air. So, we struggled a bit this time, but if you've been with us for very long, you know that sometimes they're up, sometimes they're down, and that depends on things that we don't control or understand, but we know that over the course of the year, it all evens out. It always has. And so I just want to, more than anything, say thank you for your help and support. Don't forget to support your local Catholic radio station and network. They make all of this possible. They are changing the world at the local Catholic radio level. I mean, people just, driving, never thought that they would enter the Catholic Church, and they hear that signal. And next thing you know, they're in the RCIA, they're coming in, all that kind of thing. So don't forget to support them and EWTN. But you have supported us over the last 3 days, and we are very grateful for it. And we won't bother you for a while about money. Anna Halpin is doing extraordinary work. She's the founder of the World Youth Alliance and now the CEO of FEM, which we will talk about shortly, both of which are profoundly tied up in the real struggle going on in the world for defense of human life and human dignity. And Anna Halpin, welcome. Thanks for being here with us.
Thank you.
You are on the Chris Check rocket ship. He brings people out here and schedules them for almost every minute. So I hope you've still got energy for us this hour.
Definitely.
Okay. All right. Very good. So if you would, I had the great privilege of having a talk with you this afternoon, which we will make available to people, a long-form conversation that I really personally enjoyed. But how'd you get in the human dignity business? Maybe we could just start there.
Yeah, like many of us, it was a bit of a unexpected reaction of conscience. I was a 21-year-old music student in New York City, invited to a conference at the UN on population and development. And at this conference, the US delegation invited a small group of young people to stand up and were given the floor. And these young people said, "We represent all 3 billion of the world's youth, and these are our demands as young people." They demanded abortion as a human right, sexual rights for children, and a deletion of parents' rights. So I was listening to this and I thought, you don't represent me. There are millions of other young people you don't represent. So that night, printed Diglo pink flyers at Kinko's, went into the UN the next morning, broke the rules, and for 2 hours delivered these flyers to all of the delegates. That caused pandemonium, and the developing nations came up and said, "Thank you for being here, and we need your voice in an ongoing way." So that was the beginning of the World Youth Alliance.
You remind me of a bumper sticker I've seen about well-behaved women. Do you know the bumper sticker I'm talking about?
Nope.
Oh, really? Oh, well, breaking the rules. You broke the rules and you made history.
Broke the rules, yeah.
What we talked about a little bit before, and what I've heard you speak so beautifully about in a presentation I've seen on the internet, and this is what you do, is talk about this and work for it, is a kind of divide in the world. It's like the mind of the modern world is split between people who see humanity one way and people who see humanity another way. And I don't mean to split it good people and bad people. I don't want to you're either on our team or against us. It's not that. It's just that there are two different ways of looking at the human person and where does the human person derive its value from?
Yeah. I mean, we talk a lot about that in our work, that, you know, is the human person a subject or an object? And so much of modern life and modern debates is to treat the human person as an object, something that can be used and discarded, destroyed at will. And our work is to say, no, every human person is a subject. They're a subject that has intrinsic human dignity. This human dignity must be respected. It must never be violated. And even if it is violated, that doesn't destroy the dignity of each and every human person. So that's at the heart of the work that we do, and it really informs and animates all of the decisions we make.
And that has has led from the World Youth Alliance to this project that you're the, I guess project is the right word, that you're the CEO of now, FEM. So tell us a little bit about FEM. What do you do there?
Yeah, so FEM is a women's health program. We were involved in a lot of debates about women's health, as you can imagine. And we increasingly saw that we're debating about women's health, but this is a really politicized term, and there's almost no healthcare that's being offered to women. Women's health is so often just reduced to political claims demanding contraception and abortion. So we really sat
back.
Wait,
are you saying that women need more than that?
We think women need more than that.
Oh, all right. Going out on a limb there.
And so FEM really exists to provide that, to change the standard of care and to really say, let's diagnose and treat what's going on and provide a personal, individualized plan of treatment for every woman. So that if you have a symptom, we're not going to ignore it. We're not going to put a Band-Aid on it. We're not going to not listen to you. We're not going to just fill you up with hormones. We want to say, what is that symptom? Let's get to the root cause. Let's restore health, both now and for the long term. So that's really the goal of FEM.
That is like everything you hear young people want these days. I mean, to stop just being treated as consumers, to have someone actually care, and to treat causes, not just symptoms, to not just mask things with drugs, that kind of thing. So I assume that everyone on Earth completely supports what you're doing. Is that correct?
Well, we have some friends.
Well, that's a very polite way to put it.
And there are others who obviously push back against what we do.
Why? Why do they push back against what you're trying to treat the health of women in a holistic way?
Well, and I think that's the overriding point, is to sort of push back against the pushback, to say we are making better healthcare accessible for more women. We are making better healthcare more affordable for more women. We are going to treat women in a better and stronger way. And the proof of that is going to be in the health outcomes. And so really challenge any of those other assumptions to say, why wouldn't you want this for all women? Why wouldn't you want this for your daughter, for your wife, for those closest to you? And put that way, many people don't really have a very strong objection that they're able to place. But that's where we do have to recognize and acknowledge that we are in a debate, in the most polite way of putting it, a debate about the question of the human person. Mm-hmm. And so FEM comes down squarely in support and defense of the human person. We think every human person should have the best care available, and we're committed to doing that no matter what kind of opposition might come our way.
I don't want to bring you into things that are too controversial, so let's talk about transgenderism. are the two views of humanity, the one each person is a precious subject with a dignity that must always be respected, and the other that the person is an object that can be operated upon, are they in conflict in the transgender movement?
The transgender movement, of course, can be very complex.
Okay.
And so I think that we would, again, always start by recognizing the dignity of each person involved, each person face to face. What we certainly want to also recognize is that the transgender surgeries that we're seeing right now, these are surgeries that are being done on healthy individuals, very often on children, and these are harming healthy individuals, setting up lifetime harms that cannot be corrected. We should understand that we cannot block puberty without significant adverse effects. This is completely trying to change the way our bodies are programmed. And I think that's the heart of what we're really looking at in this transgender question, which is very difficult and very painful, especially for those who are facing this and dealing with it. But it's a pain that I think is fundamentally about both the human person and, of course, this embodied reality mm-hmm. of the human person. And so our culture and our society has said for a lot of years that the reality of our bodies, reality itself, is a fungible thing. It's a fungible idea. It's right. my idea versus your idea. And taken to its natural extreme, this is one of the manifestations of it, that children, individuals don't know who they are. They're unable to identify themselves with the reality or the experience or the body that they have. And those are deep challenges that need significant compassion and support. But we also need to make sure that we are taking care of our children in very direct ways to help them understand who they are. Mm-hmm. What is it to be a human person? What is it to be male and female? Do those male and female realities have any meaning? Those are, of course, essential questions. They're essential to our lives, to the way we perceive and see the world, to the way our brains are chemically wired. And I think those are real questions that absolutely have to be answered. These questions touch most closely the work that we do with our human dignity curriculum, which is really looking to anchor in children in particular this question: who is the human person? Who am I? What does that mean? What does it mean for me? And I think that as children engage these questions, what is human freedom? Is human freedom the ability to do anything I want, or is it to engage myself, to act in ways that respect my dignity and the dignity of others? What is it to be a friend? What is it to recognize the subject of another person and not see the other person as an object for me? This, I think, is the most foundational and essential place for us to start, even as we find ways to support those individuals and families that are struggling with these profound problems and challenges.
We're talking about human dignity this hour with Anna Halpin, the founder of the World Youth Alliance and the CEO of FEM. There's an app that comes with FEM for women to track cycles, get health kind of, you tell me, what can a person who downloads the FEM app get?
Yeah, so the FEM app is free. It's available on the iPhone and Android stores, and it can be used to track your health and cycle, as well as to achieve or avoid pregnancy, so manage those fertility goals as well. The FEM app is, I think, increasingly unique in the sense that it is free. We don't sell people's information to third parties, but also because of the way that we respect the privacy of individuals and the information we share. We share science and evidence-based information. We're not sharing sex-promoting information. We're not sharing information to women that they're increasingly receiving on other charting platforms that are really recognizing or assessing them as pleasure-seeking or sex-seeking individuals. So FEM provides a space where women can learn about themselves, learn about their own body, receive personalized information about what they input, and help to understand what's healthy and normal and where they can reach out to get any support, have questions answered, or link with a medical provider when those needs arise.
The number is 888-318-7884. I love these days at Catholic Answers Live when we have wonderful guests for you both hours. If you'd like to talk with Anna Halpin about human dignity, look, whether you agree or disagree with what Anna has to say, you are welcome to call 888-318-7884. I mean, you categorize it as there are these two ways of looking at the human person. But I don't see anybody in the world who's running for office, say, or promoting a platform of we're against human dignity, we're against the human as a subject. So I want to get kind of dig in with you about why would you say that these two views are competing. I have to take about a 60-second break, and then we'll get into that. Is that all right? All right. Anna Halpin is our guest. Right back with more Catholic Answers Live.
Catch Catholic Answers Live anytime at Catholic.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
May is the month of Mary. How are you planning to honor the Blessed Mother? Whether it's planting a Mary garden in your yard, placing flowers by her image in your home, or adorning a statue of her with a handmade crown, there are many ways to express devotion to the Blessed Virgin Mary. EWTN invites you to celebrate along with us as we honor our Blessed Mother throughout her month with masses, devotions, TV, and radio specials.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. This is something that, as a Catholic, you will hear talked about all the time, human dignity. This is, the basics, the fundamentals of Catholic social teaching are human life and dignity. But we don't often know what dignity is. And the truth is that the concern for human dignity is not only a Catholic thing. This is something that we share with the rest of the world, much of the rest of the world, and we intend to share with much of the rest of the world. So we're talking about human dignity today. So I left you with something to ponder at the break, and I wonder what you would say to the, you're defending a certain view of the human being, which is as a subject, and contrasting that with the view that says the human being is an object. But there isn't anybody running, I believe humans are objects, make me president of the United States. So help me understand that.
Yeah, I mean, we say that the dignity of the person is intrinsic, it's inviolable, and it can never be given or taken away. And that has huge implications. And that's really where this division you're talking about begins. So for us, that dignity of the person is absolutely present from the first moment of conception, and it extends through natural death. So that informs how we understand the right to life, the engagement of a subject-subject conflict. What happens with a mother, a pregnant woman, and her child? Well, at the outset, we want to say that's a conflict between two subjects.
Not an object and a subject, so
correct.
To speak. Yeah, I got you.
Yeah.
Right.
And so those are framing, I don't want to say tools, they're recognition of reality that informs the way we live. Most people will actually grant that the mother and the child are both a subject. But at some point, many of us, all of us, take the position that has contradictions. And our work in defending the dignity of the person is to try to really root out those contradictions that harm another person, and to challenge ourselves and to challenge others when we are making statements, and certainly when it moves to making policy or actions in our own lives or in the lives of others that harm in some way the dignity of the person. And so this touches a whole variety of the most sensitive topics, of course. It means that our position is, when we talk about abortion, that we are protecting the inviolability of every human life. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean we don't recognize difficult situations. We can recognize those situations. We can recognize the challenge we have to hold or face or walk through in certain areas. But we also do and must recognize the humanity, the life of two individuals that already exist. This comes into play when we talk about euthanasia and assisted suicide. We have to first be aware and holding in our mind's eye as the priority, the fact that we are talking about a human life, an individual with inviolable dignity. And again, that's a big debate. Does that mean this person has the right to end their own life? Does that mean this person should not be dealing with insufferable pain? Well, there are lots of ways that we're going to address those things, but the foundation source is always going to be respect for and protection of that dignity of the person. And part of it rests on just the immutability of this idea, this overriding reality, we believe, of the power of the dignity of the person. And part of it that we can lean against that is the catastrophe that happens, has happened in history, every time we think we can mitigate or challenge or find some reason that we think is good for some political or cultural or social attempt to take that away from someone else or to take it away from ourselves. That never ends well. We have mountains of dead bodies and rivers of blood that we have waded through, especially in our century, and that continues. So that's that's really like a dividing line for us. It's not like
there's no historical record. There is a historical record. Yeah. So
there is.
If for example, the eugenics movement, that's one where there's a kind of forgetting, maybe a convenient forgetting of the subjectivity of each person, the precious value of each person, and a desire to engineer whole societies. And what that leads to is horror after horror, which is why eugenics has such a bad reputation today.
Yeah.
Although it is being revived. These ideas go around and around,
yes,
don't they?
Yes.
888-318-7884 is the number, 888-318-7884. Anna Halpin is our guest. And I have to say, one of the things that I much admire about Anna Halpin is that this is not just talk. She's in there doing the hard work of building the networks, of building the programs, of helping to craft policies that will make the world a place that's more amenable to the human person and less opposed to the human person. It's very admirable work. It's work other people could take up, right? People, you're not the only one that can do this. Other people can
join us.
Like you could join the World Youth Alliance. You can look into FEM. Mm-hmm. It's not. I guess one thing I take away from your work is it's not hopeless. You can do things even in like international secular bodies. You can do work that will actually make human lives better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean that's what keeps us all going, of course, and it's a truism to say, oh, if you only change one life, you've changed the world. But we see that. We see lives changed. We see young people engaged and the joy of friendships that are formed by thinking about and debating and working on these very tough policy questions. Those friendships last a lifetime, and sometimes we even shift the policy. The joy of our medical providers as they take care of patients and can really influence healthier outcomes, happier, healthier individuals and families as a result. These are the reasons why people keep going, even if that's not even why you started.
888-318-7884. I am going to go to the callers. We've got a couple callers on. There are lines open if you'd like to call. 888-318-7884. But I want to ask you one question before I go to the callers. I'm going to share with you my impression, and tell me if my impression is off, that the primary assaults on human dignity in the modern world are invented in the developed world, exported to the developing world. That seems to me what happens. Is that what happens? And if it is, why is that what happens?
Well, I'm not going to try to deny that so much of what we are facing is funded and pushed through significant political pressures from the West, mm-hmm. both on the West and internationally. There are other institutions that I think set up the permeability of these ideas as well. So again, global media platforms that are tilling the field, making people think, yeah, I want these ideas, or I want to be like those people. I want to be successful. I want to be happy. This is a way to do it. lots of these aspects are in play as they have been, but the move of ideas, the movement of ideas, and the permeability of these ideas into new cultures or cultures that have had a little bit more strength to fight is shifting. So that does make our work a little bit more urgent these mm-hmm. days. But there's absolutely an attempt. I think always the paradigm, as I see it, is strongly power. So those who have power, those who have funds, those who have the ability to force. And of course, what's ironic about this is that that's a very patriarchal kind of play that's in play. A lot of people talk about this as ideological colonization, and we're seeing that happening all over the world today.
All right, I didn't time that very well. Emily and David, I'm going to get to you in order when we come back and then on to other callers. There are lines open, 888-318-7884. Anna Halpin is our guest. We're talking about human dignity, and that is what she has spent her adult life defending and promoting. If you've got questions, if you want to get in on the conversation, 888-31-TRUTH.
Why We're Catholic is the one book you can hand to anyone to invite them into or back to the Catholic faith. With more than 400,000 copies sold, Trent Horn's book has had a number one ranking on Amazon.com for 5 years running. Now available in softcover, bulk cases, ebook, and on Audible. Find out what the excitement is all about. Order your copies of Why We're Catholic at shop.catholic.com or visit whyweearecatholic.com.
When the resurrected Jesus appeared to disciples on the road to Emmaus, they didn't recognize him until the breaking of the bread. The same is true today. In the Holy Eucharist, we really meet Jesus. In The Eucharist is Really Jesus, author Joe Heschmeyer explains how knowing Jesus in the Eucharist is the key to understanding all of Christian faith. Order your copy of The Eucharist is Really Jesus today at shop.catholic.com or get it at a good Catholic bookstore.
If you're not a Bible scholar, the full message of how the Sunday Mass readings fit together can be tough to comprehend. Apologist Carlo Broussard is here to help. Join Carlo every Friday for the Sunday Catholic Word Podcast. In each episode, he unpacks the scripture readings for that Sunday and brings them all together so you can better understand and defend the faith. Visit SundayCatholicWord.com to subscribe. That's SundayCatholicWord.com.
Are you scared to talk about abortion? Don't worry, almost everyone is. You can overcome this fear, as Trent Horn shows in the newly revised and expanded second edition of Persuasive Pro-Life. With a little knowledge and a few proven techniques, you can become a bold and effective apologist for life. Visit shop.catholic.com to order your copy of Persuasive Pro-Life and never again be afraid to speak up. Also available at good Catholic bookstores. Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm sorry I kept you waiting. Emily in Raleigh, North Carolina, listening on Divine Mercy Radio. We're talking with Anna Halpin about human dignity, and with the World Youth Alliance, with FEMME and the FEMME app, with the, tell me the curriculum again, the Human Dignity Curriculum?
Yeah.
With the Human Dignity Curriculum. All of these things are meant to promote human dignity around the world, and they are, in fact, working to do that. Because that's one of the things Anna is capable of doing, is not just coming up with ideas, but implementing them, building coalitions that will get the work done. And you're welcome to call and talk with Anna Halpin if you'd like, 888-318-7884. Emily, thank you for waiting. Go ahead with your question for Anna Halpin.
Oh, no problem at all. Anna and I are actually acquainted. And while I was waiting, I actually thought of another question apart from my first one. So please stop me if there's not enough time for both. My first question, Anna, is foremost in my mind because I just finished teaching someone who is falling into this trap. With fertility awareness-based methods like FEMME, with our brothers and sisters in Christ who may not be versed in human dignity, we see like a trend towards using apps to inform barrier use during the so-called fertile window. So my first question was wondering if you could speak to, you know, how does that relate to, you know, in a very intimate sense, this concept of human dignity, barrier use, and using apps like Femme to inform use of barriers when we are possibly fertile.
Thanks, Emily. So we teach in Femme that targeting pregnancy avoidance to the fertile phase is a good way to get pregnant. So that, I think, is how we would address this, is really to say that if you're going to try to average failure rates using barrier methods, but you're only using those barrier methods during the fertile phase, those barrier methods will fail at higher rates than the standard percent failure. What we want to teach women is to give them confidence in their own bodies. And what we often see with women is that women who are fearful about conceiving or fearful about trusting their body and understanding their fertile and non-fertile signs, they often have challenging or difficult cycles to interpret. And when we know that when we have a difficult cycle where it's not clear to the woman when she's fertile and when she's not fertile, that that is often, almost always, an underlying health issue that is raising its head. So our approach is to say to that woman, let us work with you to help you understand your body, and let us work with you to make sure you have the medical support you need so that we can clear up or improve your health outcomes, get you that strong and clear chart so that you can then manage that to achieve or avoid pregnancy, understanding what you're seeing and able to use that as you move forward. And the Femme app is a great tool to assist in that, because the Femme app will help that woman to understand if her charting pattern, cycle over cycle, is healthy and normal, and it will give her ways to identify healthcare providers who can help her to seek guidance and get those underlying questions tested and diagnosed if that's needed.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. Is there time for me to ask one
more
question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you so much. So on the flip side of this, and I apologize if you've already covered this because I just tuned in a few minutes ago. To your point about, you know, understanding normal physiology and what is good and natural, on the flip side of those who are wanting to conceive, not avoid, and we know that that population is increasing, I think it's like 1 in 6 or 1 in 8, depending what source you look at. Can you speak to how uses of methods like Femme and the Femme app can be a segue into alternatives to IVF, which are clearly not respecting human dignity?
Yeah, thanks. So again, the Femme app will help women to understand if what we're seeing, so they enter their own data, their own observations, and we're helping them interpret their own pattern over time. So where we see that different parts of the cycle are too long or too short, let's say we have too much bleeding, too little bleeding, we don't have a clear ovulatory pattern, the luteal phase, meaning that progesterone is low, the woman will receive feedback in the app inviting her to reach out to get more medical help. That's, of course, essential if a woman is seeing patterns like this cycle over cycle. So if we see two cycles that have difficult patterns in a row, we elevate those to our medical care. So we want to be seeing these women quickly. We don't want to leave a woman on her own, struggling to understand cycle after cycle, month after month. And if a woman has symptoms, and a symptom could be infertility, like I've been trying to conceive for 6 or 12 months or many years, we don't even need to wait. We can see those women on the medical team right away. And we want to do that because we know that the vast majority of underlying conditions are not being diagnosed and treated. The earlier we treat them, the better outcomes we're going to have, especially with pregnancy. Age is a related factor, so we love to get these women in as early as possible and start to diagnose and treat them. And we're seeing wonderful outcomes on our pregnancy treatment side, and we want to help women do that. We say to women, If your goal is achieving a pregnancy, let's work to achieve that pregnancy. But our first goal is also to restore your health. We want that woman to be a healthy mother. We want that woman to be a healthy grandmother. But we want her to have a long experience of health. And restoring that health is essential, even if we are going to then struggle to get that pregnancy outcome. But that pregnancy goal is contingent on health. And so it's really important to remember and to help women know that ovulation is a sign of health. Fertility is a sign of health. So where we see infertility, where we have those challenges with infertility, we want to move those women into medical care as quickly as possible so that we have our best shot at diagnosing and treating what's going on, restoring health, restoring ovulation, and helping them prepare for a healthy pregnancy.
Emily, thank you very much for opening the calls for us. The number is 888-318-7884. Anna Halpin is our guest. We're talking human dignity and the FEM project that you've undertaken and is now helping thousands and thousands of people. It includes the FEM app that people can use. It increasingly includes direct healthcare via telemedicine. For example, if a woman were to say was having these some of these problems that you just were talking about with Emily, and the woman requests to see a doctor, the doctor says, "Well, this sounds like this." The doctor could then prescribe tests where would they be hormonal tests and blood tests and that kind of thing, and then you could possibly detect things that are awry in that way?
Yeah, so every telehealth patient or every FEM patient will walk through the FEM medical protocols. So we will look at her own charting pattern. We will order what we call a BHP, a basic hormonal profile, which is a blood lab draw of over a dozen hormones, plus any other blood lab draws we think are relevant to her own medical history. And then we're also going to take a look at the ultrasound imaging. We're going to take an ultrasound image of her ovary and her endometrium. All of that data should give us the same picture. It should help us to start to arrive at a diagnosis that lines up with the symptoms that the woman is reporting. And if we get close, but we see that we don't have enough, we'll order some additional tests. It will give us that indicator of where we need to go. I think the really powerful aspects of the FEM approach is that we get a strong and an accurate diagnosis quickly. And that's working in collaboration with the woman. So we're working together to get this battery of tests. We're working together to understand her symptoms and goals. And we're really getting to the root cause as quickly as possible so that we can treat.
I guess this is a counterweight or a new option or an alternative for those who, especially those who feel that they're not heard in the current medical system, who are not, the tests aren't being done and the body being listened to. Rather, what's happening is a prescription for IVF or a prescription for contraception or many things that maybe are easy to prescribe, but aren't really patient care necessarily.
Yeah, and to your point, a lot of what we hear from women is that almost every woman is an underserved woman. Hmm. So it's such a continuous refrain to hear from women, well, yeah, I've gone to 5 or 6 doctors and then I loop around and start all over again and I just can't figure out what's going on. And I'm changing my diet and I'm changing my exercise and I'm doing all these different things, but I feel like, and women will say this all the time, that it's all connected, that my body is a unity and I'm going to specialist after specialist and I'm being dissected and taken apart and no one is putting it together. FEM puts it together because what we're really working with at the heart of our diagnostic process is reproductive endocrinology. And what that means is we're really looking at hormones. And of course, hormones are the messengers that our brain sends. So our brain is the unifying principle that's managing all the systems and organs of our body. It's sending these hormones. These hormonal feedback loops are setting the levels that are being impacted. So when we can really understand that broad hormone activity and understand it in relation to ovulation, which it turns out is the proxy sign of health for a woman, then we're really equipped to identify even very small abnormalities, which translate to feelings of ill health for women. They can translate to low-grade headaches or brain fog. They translate to mood swings. They translate to low energy. They also have these other like broader symptoms that we're all very much more aware of, like too much bleeding, too little bleeding, or weight gain or weight loss, or a diagnosis that maybe we don't know what to do with it, PCOS or endometriosis. So much of this is linked to these hormones. And when we can restore those hormones, we want to reduce inflammation, want to restore health, and we want to be managing how the body is able to function.
Emily, again, thank you for the call. Let's go to David in South Dakota listening on Real Presence Radio. David, welcome. Go ahead with your question for Anna Halpin.
Yes, God bless, and thank you for speaking with me. I'm talking about this upcoming alliance with the World Health Organization that, if signed, and it looks like it will be, that will provide them with the ability to regulate our health care, our vaccines, and our abortions. They are very much wanting to be in charge of our health and our sovereignty. Do you have a response to that?
Thanks, David. So one of the things that has been under contention over all the years that we've been working at the UN and even much earlier is this question of sovereignty. It's essential. One of the bulwarks against these international documents and adoptions in the United States in particular is that for the United States to adopt a treaty, technically a two-thirds Senate majority vote is required. So the United States, even if it is promoting negotiations on certain topics, has been functionally unable to adopt any of these globally negotiated treaties for many decades. That doesn't mean that they don't have an impact, because this language gets negotiated and it turns up in a lot of places. It can turn up in the World Health Organization health requirements or standards of care. And that way it carries through and it shows up in hospital guidelines. It can show up in medical guidelines. Medical associations can adopt these different areas. And these are reasons why our organization has maintained a presence to be on the ground in these negotiations, doing our best to represent a different voice and a different viewpoint where we can. As you mentioned, this negotiation is moving forward to adoption. A number of countries have already indicated they won't be adopting it. That already slows the process, even for adoption in the West. And I think after the experience of everyone over the last many years, there's a lot more hesitancy to adopt global standards for local responses or national responses to health and well-being. And we'll have to see how that continues to unfold. Thanks so much.
Thank you, David. Thanks very much. Was there a big thought after the pandemic that an outcry around the world that what we need is more government power? That'll solve? I missed that. I missed that outcry for more government power. But maybe I wasn't paying attention. We got to take a quick break. Anna Halpin, she just doesn't answer. She's just like, you say the foolish thing over there. I will continue to be a dignified person over here. Right back. We're talking about human dignity. If you want to get in on the conversation, 888-318-7884.
This is Archbishop Paul Coakley, the Archdiocese of Oklahoma City, and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Who was the first Catholic in your family? Were they evangelized by a friend, a coworker, a stranger? Did you ever think that you could be that person that God uses to save a soul, and that soul could save their family, their grandchildren, and generations to come? At St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, we train, equip, and mobilize Catholic disciples to do the urgent work of evangelization. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization, streetevangelization.com.
The most original Catholic content is on EWTN Radio.
What have you always wanted to know about the Vatican? Well, I'm your Vatican Insider, and I answer that question when I bring you the news about the Pope, Vatican City, and I share insights and stories from a broad spectrum of church ministries.
Vatican Insider with Joan Lewis, Saturday night, 9 Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
Thank you. Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. We're talking about human dignity. 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-318-7884. Beautiful phrases are often turned into among the most abused phrases. And human dignity is pretty much used to justify everything. I mean, we've had mass murder justified in the name of making things more dignified. So do you have a walking definition of dignity? Is there some way that you can protect against that?
Yeah, I mean, that's an obvious question that is important to raise. I mean, we all know, for instance, that dignitas and dignity was the slogan for the promotion of euthanasia in Switzerland.
Well, we all know that because I didn't know that. Sometimes I don't know the things that we all know, but okay.
For many years, we've, well, to your point, this is often used and abused. I think what we found when we got into the game, let's say, with the founding of the World Youth Alliance, was that there was really this attempt to create new human rights in the name of upholding the human rights tradition. And what we say is that just isn't true, that you can't have contradictions maintaining a tradition. You can't say, for instance, that the dignity of the person is the foundation of human rights, which means that the human person comes first and laws and rights must first respect that. That's the legacy of the Nuremberg trials. And also say that human rights grant human dignity. You can't flip the script that way. So we realized that, in fact, the defense of the human person from conception to natural death, the defense of the human person against all of these new and old ways of attacking and violating the human person, they cannot be couched. Well, they can be couched, but they are not legitimate heirs of the human rights tradition. And that is a stake that we have placed in the ground to defend the human person, to make that present in these global debates, to make sure that that voice is raised in defense where needed, and to recognize that as we do that, we are in fact the legitimate heirs of this project, not only the modern human rights project, but the more ancient human rights project that goes back hundreds of years prior to that and was really in many ways started through the Catholic Church, through priests and philosophers, primarily in Spain, who were defending the rights, the dignity of the Indian, the Native American tribes that were coming into conflict and coming to be discovered by explorers around the world.
Are these people or not, was the question.
Right, I actually think it's the same question over
De las
and
Casas
over.
Lost that, the big trial in Spain, but it's almost like they lost the trial, but the ideas won in time. Eventually, those ideas won.
They did. And every age, I think, we have to be willing to do that. We have to be willing to win a battle or lose a battle to continue to defend these ideas, even when they're unpopular, but recognizing that we are part of a long tradition where people are often in the way of other people. People can be inconvenient, they can be unwanted, this is not anything new, and we need to be willing, some of us, as many of us as possible, need to be willing to raise our voice for the voiceless, stand for those who can't stand for themselves, and that is at the root, the project that we are engaged in.
So say there's a young person, maybe a Christian person, maybe not, just a person of goodwill who becomes convinced of this idea that the human person is a dignified subject, then looks around at the world and says, I mean, even just here in the United States, it says, like, look at how many people we have imprisoned, and then look at the conditions of those prisons. Look at all the poverty. Look at all the killing of preborn children, and then the suicide epidemic, and the loss of communities because people are home watching TV. You know, just so this person, this good-hearted young person, says, "I want to fight for human dignity." Where do they go to fight for it? Where are the meetings happening? You know what I'm saying? Like, they need a practical way to fight for it.
Yeah, they do. And the first step, as you say, is to get involved. So we welcome young people getting involved with our organization. You can go on our website to sign the charter or email us. But get involved anywhere. The first step is getting started. And it's harder to get started when you're not doing anything. But then it's harder to stop once you've begun. And that really is the key, is to start getting involved in the defense of someone else.
You mean find a practical project, like here's a prison reform project, or an anti-poverty project, or to house people, or something like that, and actually get in on the ground level and start working on those things.
Find something you love. Yeah, if that's what you're interested in, go out there and do it. If you're a philosopher, get the philosophy worked out. If you're a teacher, teach well. Teach the hard things. Teach people how to think. Teach them how to discover the truth. That's, I think, where we all have to begin to engage. Not everyone is going to do the same things, but find a place where you can engage, find a place where you can learn, find a place that challenges you, and figure out what you need to get engaged. Flannery O'Connor is a great American writer, and she has this beautiful phrase that says, "The life you save may be your own." So you go out to save someone else, and you do find, I think all of us find, that the life you save is really your own. You get involved, you fight for the truth, you try to discover the truth, you start to move step by step, and you just get involved in networks of friendships and networks that keep you going, and you get deeper into these ideas so that you can move one step forward at a time.
Then what if you get canceled? Like, do you know what I'm saying? Like, you do this work because there's some love in your heart for your fellow human, and there's people that dump on you because of it. They'll say you hate women, or you know, whatever the silly label that they'll put on you. I mean, a lot of us are afraid of getting canceled.
Be not afraid.
Okay. Oh, you're going to do the gospel on me, huh?
People will hate us, keep going anyway. That, uh-huh. I think, it, like what your mother and your kindergarten teacher told you, what you learn in the gospels, that's still true today. And I think that where the challenge is great, the need is great, and each of us need to find the courage within ourselves to stand up and be counted. And how we do that will be different for each of us. What we need to do and what we're called to do is different for each of us. But each of us is definitely called to respond to truth, to respond to injustice. And the way that presents itself in front of us is with so many opportunities every single day. And to not move forward or to avoid those opportunities because we're afraid, mm-hmm. is to retreat and kind of cancel ourselves before we even have that opportunity to move forward.
Yeah. And do you find in this work that you're surprised by who your allies are sometimes? I mean, I imagine you're probably surprised by who your enemies are sometimes, but are you sometimes surprised to find out who your allies are?
Yeah. Life is full of surprises. And definitely, there are good people. There are truth seekers everywhere. There are people of courage. When you're under fire, those people come forward. They're not always who you expect. And those are also precious moments where you really have the opportunity to see who individuals are and who your particular friends and allies are. And those are people that you learn you can continue to walk forward with no matter what as you go.
888-318-7884 is the number. I don't know why I'm giving it out because now we're at the end. But Anna Halpin has been our guest. I don't know. I just got excited and I gave out the number. I wanted people to call. But how can people find out about the World Youth Alliance, about the dignity curriculum, the human dignity curriculum, and FEM?
All of these are available online. You can Google these names and find our websites. The World Youth Alliance website is wya.net, World Youth Alliance, wya.net. We're on Facebook and Instagram as well. The Human Dignity Curriculum is humandignitycurriculum.org.
Good titles. You found good names for these.
And the FEM website is FEMHealth, F-E-M-M Health. .org, and available also for free in the iPhone and Android store.
Yeah, you can just go get the app and download it if you'd like to use it. I hope, I'll tell you what, we had a nice long conversation with Anna Halpin earlier about how all this came about, how she got involved in it, and what it all means. And we'll be posting that somewhere in our materials coming up here. We haven't figured out exactly where yet, but we'll be posting it. Do check out FEM and all that they do. It's just a magnificent opportunity, I think, to be reminded of human dignity, but also to start the practice of treating the whole person. Anna Halpin, thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you.
Deacon Harold's coming up next hour, and we're going to talk about not losing your peace, holding on to that peace. Christ gave us peace. He prays for our peace. Why do we let go of it? Right after this on Catholic Answers Live.